back and forth for about 3 minutes so we can get through as many as possible. Nate, develop more organically than that, we'll see how it goes, but I want everyone to have an opportunity to talk at least once and we can guarantee that with Paris. I'd love to get out of here by 9 o'clock, I think all of you will too. So we're going to try to keep it to 2 hours, an hour, 15 minutes, what have you, but we're not going to get anybody out of here, so I want to make sure that we have the time. Any questions so far?
Thank you. I'm a little jealous because Jeremy just rolled your name right off. And I spent the entire day trying to learn how to roll my R's. So I don't speak French, so when I speak about Muriel, please forgive me for not pronouncing it the proper way. But my name is Carol Asher, for those of you who I have not met. I am one of three panel members who were on the CEO search committee. We were actually invited by your school and your board to do so, and we've taken our job extremely seriously. The other two members could not be here tonight. One is Kelly McClure. Kelly is with Leading Educators. And Nicole Boudreau. They are both listening in, though. They're right here. There's Kelly. You can see your picture. And Nicole is listening as well. Nicole is actually in Lafayette. So the three of us have been working very hard on your behalf to go through a number of applicants in this process. I said we took it very seriously. I did learn what Google Hangout was. That was a big deal. And we utilized that source, and that's where Kelly is right now. So just to give you, I wanted to give you an idea of what our team really wanted you to have an idea of what we did and how we did it. And some of you were so diligent in coming, being my friends out here, I've got to know who came to every single one of our meetings and welcome that. But those of you who were not there, I want you to know that we met on many, many occasions. We reviewed approximately 35 resumes. They were taped. I will tell you in all honesty, the only way that I ever am, not any of them stood out even remotely at the level of this candidate. So I mean that very sincerely. When we made our initial cut, and some of you were there that night, from 30 resumes, applications, down to 5, Muriel was at the top of that list. So, and we all agreed on that. We can say it out loud, but we did agree upon it. We then conducted a 1-hour video conference for Google Hangout with Muriel, and we asked her dozens of questions, and we concentrated on 4 main areas. And those 4 main areas were academics, leadership skills, I wrote this down because I wanted to be sure you knew all of this, finances, and fundraising abilities. And we all, between the three of us, we all excel in different areas. So we used our areas that we excel in both as professionals to ask those questions. Our 3-member CEO search committee then looked at what these, where our strengths were in selecting the questions. At the end of this interview, we were a bit frustrated. I'll be honest again, we were a bit frustrated because we had so much more we would have liked to have asked. And I think you had more that you would have liked to have told us, but we had time constraints, and so we were limited. And the nature of video conferencing versus having a live interview was also a bit frustrating. We wished right from the beginning we could have been face-to-face. But we agreed wholeheartedly, immediately following that video conference, to invite Muriel to submit a written project which was sent to her the next day by Jeremy Nelson, and we all agreed that based on our limitations of not being in person, she was, based on her interview, a very, very strong candidate indeed. So we also agreed that, and we agreed, I will say this each individually and collectively, that we took our job, as I said, as your search committee, very seriously, and would only select the very, very best candidate. And those of you who came when we met, you heard us say that to you as well. We were not going to sell. If we didn't come up with the right person, we were just going to keep looking until we did. Because that's what we want for our children's school. And we're all very involved in charter school reform movement, and that's what we wanted for your school. So the next within the next couple of days, we received Marielle's project right on time. And again, felt a little frustrated because it was basically in an outline form. And we were very, very anxious to meet her and get to talk about that outline. And we really, we read how she responded. We recognized that it was an outline form and that she would be making, should we invite her presentation on it. But we really wanted to dig deeper, and we knew that we could only do that by inviting her here to do that. So we wholeheartedly voted, the three of us, to invite her to New Orleans to meet with us, to meet with your board, to tour your school, and to meet with you as parents of the school, and to meet some of your children, which we hopefully have on the tour today. Our three-member panel decided on what questions we specifically thought were important to ask when we had a face-to-face 2-hour interview. We started before 8 a.m. this morning, so this is one tired lady, I'm sure. I'm exhausted, but I'm sure she's used to working these kind of very long days. I have no doubt of that. We decided where, again, where our strengths lie, what we specifically wanted to ask. We read her presentation, her outline, and we decided based on that where we wanted to dig deeper and what kinds of questions we wanted to ask to let her know how very, very important this decision was for us to make. So we met with her this morning. She defended for her project. I will tell you, I am not an educator, but I understood it all. She defended it brilliantly. I really think it was just incredible. We were all wowed. All three of us were wowed. Including Nicole, who was in Lafayette and was following along. And we decided that after her project, we wanted to ask her questions that would dig deeper into what we had just heard her say to us in defending that project. And so following that, a similar format to what we had, and being able to go deeper into it, we wanted to know what specific, and I'm not going to answer any of these because she's going to answer them to you, I'm sure, what specific kind of leader she is and would she be here, why she would want to move to New Orleans from San Francisco, what her educational philosophies are as far as how she relates to children, and how she envisioned her leadership team looking. So those were just some of our questions. We also asked her how she envisioned working with the board, and this particular board, and for the board. We asked how she would make the school a more diverse school, bringing in more at-risk students. And finally, we asked, in many ways, what were the keys to the success of any charter school? Well, I will say this from my own experience, the key to the success of any charter school is financial resources. So we asked her about that. On all accounts, our panel was wowed. We were wowed in every single respect. And we could not
I feel like I'm on, you know, the movies, but we really could not imagine that candidate, what we say. And for the parents, for the children, for the teachers, for the board, for all of you, and most of all, for the community of New Orleans, so in the state of Louisiana. So we felt that her answers that she gave us were heartfelt. We felt they were intelligent, in some cases brilliant. We thought that they were, we asked her, I mean, we were firing one question after another. We felt that we really put her on the spot. In many cases, no one of you felt that way, but we felt that way. And we felt that they were, her answers were well thought out, even though she had seconds to respond to us. We saw in her a really great talent, a true leader in every sense, as well as someone who we felt was very down to earth. And one who you, as a school, as parents, teachers, and administrators, and as students, could both learn to respect and admire and feel great confidence in. So Muriel is someone I'm really proud to be one of the three of us to get to stand up here and introduce her to you. In the very short amount of time that we got to know her and that we spent together, all three of us individually and collectively felt strongly that she had every quality that we were looking for and to fill this job. And we chose, even though your board asked us to wait on this, we chose as a search committee to not listen to that and to vote to recommend that she be made an offer to be hired by our school instead of waiting until this entire day was concluded. So I am very happy to introduce my new friend, Muriel, and I will leave her with you in good hands to ask questions and in this town hall meeting. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I feel really humbled. This would be very hard, Carol. Do you know how hard it is for me now to answer any of those questions? Because I'm supposed to be brilliant, and I'm not sure I can. So, well, thank you for the very flattering introduction. Let me pronounce my name for you. My name is Ilai Habadeh, and I've been in education for many more years than I care to admit, I have to say. I started as a very young teacher, and I was teaching French literature, Greek and Latin, actually Greek and Latin, which is classical, famous in France, called classic, you know, that's classic. I taught for about 10 years at Columbia University. I taught as a teacher of French and foreign language. And I taught in various high schools and middle schools in France. I also taught at the University of Oslo. I lived in Norway for 2 years. So I've been moving around quite a bit, and I'm back to France. I know that my resume has been made public, so most of you maybe are familiar with it, but just summing it up for those of you who didn't do the homework, that's fine, I don't like homework. After that, about 10 years, I decided that, well, I realized that real change can happen in the school if there's a leader. And I learned that from the head of school that I had been working with, and for the various schools I had been working with. Some of them, with some of the heads of schools, everything was possible. With some others, nothing was ever possible, and we're talking public schools in France. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I would like to be the one who makes, you know, brings the change and help people move forward and do interesting things in school. So I took the French credentials to become a head of school, and I did that about 20 years ago, and since I never regretted it. I had such a great time. I had a great time as a teacher, but it's even better now. I can go to every class whenever I want. So it's really been an incredible journey for me over the past year. So after I became a principal at the high school, I worked for French public schools in France, and then I was sent by the French government as an expatriate to the French International School in Washington, D.C., Lycée Rochambeau. And then I was offered a position at French American International School in San Francisco, where I have been for the past 4 years. So this is what I've been doing in terms of, you know, the variety of my experience. But what I'm really interested in is what happens to the children, of course. So I have to admit that I'm more of the expert of a secondary school than a primary school. But a lot of the schools that I've been with were either in 6 through 12 or pre-K through 12. So fairly familiar territory there anyway. I think schools are really important. If someone wanted to change the world, there's only one way. That's how you work. That's how you make sure that the next generation is going to do things better than we did or than we do. And that's my passion I have about it. International education, having my bilingual program, bringing in, you know, the pride of the heritage for those families who have French roots here, like we do in San Francisco. San Francisco, only 25% of our students come from French families, in fact. And it's a very international school when you look at the parents and family body. And I don't know here, you know, I understand that here too, this is a pretty international school in terms of what is a diverse school in terms of background and origin. That and roots. So roots and means, that's really important in school for the students to know where they come from and be proud of it, and grow the means that they're going to, you know, need to succeed in the world, in tomorrow's world. Well, I don't want to talk too long because I could, of course, but I think, you know, I understand that there are speaker cards, so I understand that you're going to be writing questions. And I should, you know, unless you have questions right off the bat about myself as a person, you know, should I say that I'm a dual citizen, a just became an American citizen in January? Finding is not only about resumes, and it's also about building a team that can work together. And as you know, it's a little bit like being a coach on a sports team. You don't need to have stars. The all-star team usually doesn't do it much good, really. But you need to have a team that works together. So how to do it? Right now, there are a few procedures that are, that are a little constraining for the recruiting process, but maybe that can change. And anyway, I would say that one of the things that I look for is people who are energetic, committed to their teaching. The reason they're teaching is not because they didn't know what else to do. People who are open-minded and will be willing to learn. And I believe that the school needs to promote learning, whether it is among the children or among the adults and faculty and staff. So professional development is one of the hiring, and professional development, of course. And making it like a target, goal, you know, choosing the areas after assessing what's going on in the classrooms and discussing that with the faculty, what are the areas for improvement, what is new teaching in the 21st century is not what it used to be. It looks very different and should feel also very different to the teacher and to the students. So those are the two, you know, looking into the process of the hiring process that is in place right now and how it can be improved, if you can. Looking for not only the best people, but the best people to work together, make it a team, really, and professional development, targeted professional development, whether it can be a strategy or a recommend for that.
After years of a privately funded institution, would you feel comfortable operating within the budgetary constraints of a public charter?
I don't know. Hopefully. But I've been also working for a long time with public schools in France. And we have just the same public constraint. It's just a matter of you're free within this boundary, you know, and your freedom and creativity is right there. So I've never felt that it was dependent in any way or that it was, you know, a problem to have some constraint. Whatever it was, even a very rich, very well established independent school in any part of the country was, everybody at home. Well, the sustainability of the school is a different story.
Forward without being influenced by the
Well, by getting to know people first, by listening to all of you, and most of, you know, I will probably hear a lot if I go there. If, I have an open door policy, so I invite people in, and whether the teacher, parents, or the students, you know, I deal with little older students right now. Every school has their factions, every school has their fractures, actually, and I recently that this has been a pretty painful year. So yeah, there's probably a lot of healing to be done, and a lot of listening. Seems like a great project, so and I'm sure all of you, even when you defer, when you're disagreeing on many things, you all agree on one thing, that you want the school to succeed. And you want the best for your children, which you should. So goodwill, open line of communication, and making sure that everybody feels included and listened to, which doesn't mean that everybody has to agree with everybody. And I actually truly believe that disagreeing is very fertile. You know, it brings in new ideas and challenges people and challenges our own beliefs and our own opinions. So I hope it can be a constructive criticism, and if that's what it is, then should we move forward. Yeah. Teachers, students, community, there are a variety of things that can be done. I saw that we have like a family picnic every year. I saw, you know, a couple of events or maybe more. I don't know how much the community is interested in that. This is a pretty big community already, because I see almost 400 students from my teacher. So you must have at least 320 or something families, probably, you know, on average. So getting everybody to agree about everything is not going to happen. Yeah, let's be realistic here. It's not going to happen. But agree on the main things. Usually people agree on the main goals and then disagree on how to get there. Does that answer your part of the question as much as possible? You know, I don't know much about the school yet.
Great job and great town.
Great school.
Everything. Did more about the job and the chance, you know. Did I visit New Orleans before? Yes, I came over, but just once. This is my second time in the city. I came just by chance. I decided to spend New Year's Eve with my son and his girlfriend here, just this past holiday. And we took a road trip from Houston to here, to the country, and ended up in New Orleans for New Year's Eve, which was a lot of fun, I have to say. And we visited for a few days. So yeah, I really liked it. I mean, I come from Southern France, my family comes from the Mediterranean, and there's sort of a European, Southern European feeling, feel in the city, I guess. So we found home. And I love to cook, I love to eat. That sounds like a good place too. Same thing in San Francisco, by the way. Great place to cook and eat.
Discuss your vision for your leadership team.
Okay. So, the team is made of people who have different abilities. Not everybody has to be good at everything. The main job for the CEO or the head of school is to assemble the right team. Someone asked that, you know, special lesson. You know, that and relationship with the board of trustees and states and all that. But the main job is to hire the right people and to hire them according to what is needed for the school. But also, and their professional skills, but also their personal skills and how they're going to represent the school. The leadership team or the management team in many ways. So to me, that comprises principles you can have them, the financial director, someone in vision, someone in development. That would be four or five, at least five people, I guess, which is not too many for 400 people. That would be chosen. I come from the southwest of France where we play rugby. I don't know whether any of you know about rugby. But rugby is a great sport. Where there is.
We have a rugby team.
You have a rugby team in this school?
Wow.
Oh, chance? Oh, we have a rugby team, yeah. So it's a sport where there's room for everybody, whether you're tall and thin or short and stocky or you're quick or not, or you have good arm, that's what a team is. In a team, everybody has a job and they have to do it. Not everybody else's job, and not everyone else's either. So, you know, if you're the goalie, then obviously you're supposed to stop the ball, you're not supposed to kick it. I'm sorry, you're not to score. It's not your job. And things like that. That's how I see a team working together. It's people who are committed, who believe in the project, and believe that they can do their own job and mind their own business.
From Lisa Nunez, state your leadership philosophy and give some examples of it.
Yeah, that's a question that a lot of schools ask. Regarding the leadership philosophy. I would say I believe in energy, creativity, humor, honesty. Those are the four things that I would say are core values of what I do. And I would, you know, refer to every time I have to make a decision. It is honest, it is creative, it is fun, you know, it is something that can bring you. A school should be fun, right? A school can't be a little boring, you know, of course, it's a workplace for me. But it has to be a joyful place, and it has to be, and it's always an emotional place, so it's always delicate, it's a delicate balance between all the things.
Okay.
Thank you. Short, so that you can go to more questions.
From Mary Lachlan, can you sound, whether you know the former director, Jean-Jacques Rondier, and if so, the nature of the relationship, since you're both in schools in San Francisco, seems reasonable in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I know your life from China, actually, because when I arrived since I arrived to, you know, Washington, Lycée Français in Washington, actually, he was the assistant head at Lycée Français in San Francisco, and I came as an assistant head, so we had the exact same position at the time, and we were working together on, you know, exams and back and all the things. So, and you know, the network of French schools has conferences every year, two or three conferences every year, which we attended, and so we got to know each other. And then when I came to San Francisco, he was pretty much the only person I knew, so with a couple of friends, so I spent a few times and then left. So, we had a good professional, amicable relationship, I would say. We're, you know, good friends, part of the professional thing.
Kim Frayer, she can you give us a sense of what excites you about being in school? What have you liked most about your previous jobs? Why do you want this one? What's the reason for that?
Okay. What I enjoy is, again, changing the world of the school, changing the way schools work to operate better, making schools better, giving the teachers an opportunity to understand what a great, fantastic job they're doing. I mean, they have a great job. Are they doing a great job? I don't know. But they have a great job. It could be really interesting and a life changer. And we all remember here. I'm sure we all remember one of the teachers who changed our life. I hope you do. I do. I also remember a mystery that I didn't have to, and I thought, yeah, that's exactly what I want to be. I want to be that, you know, that person. And I said, yeah, let's do it. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to have great results and this and that. And let's think about it. I think it's a very, you know, it might not sound like it, but it's a, leading a school is a very creative job. It touches to so many areas from it requires people skills, it requires organizational skills, it requires politics, diplomacy, you know, delicacy, subtlety, and energy. So I never had a dull day in the school, any school, for the past 20 years. So that's what it's like to see the headship.
Robert, do you
still
want your second question? Was it answered first? What do you
realize that this is about professional development of faculty?
Yeah.
And actually, we touched upon, we have a lot of turnover as part of the needs of requirements. We've got outdated. Suffice to say that more of the cost of turnover to the constantly that it stands right now with the deputy faculty coming in. So I'm wondering about orientation and professional development.
Excuse me, Jeremy. Yeah, I'm going to
here.
Do we have another microphone?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because of this related to faculty and professional development, because of some of the visa requirements, we have some turnover in faculty, which is part of the thing right now. And so one of the things I was curious about is what are your thoughts on orienting new faculty, professional development, faculty, even strong, which we do have in the school, even development.
Well, the question of orientation for new teachers coming from France, especially,
yeah,
is really important. Because this is a very new environment for them, and they're usually very young. They have a little bit of experience, from what I understand, but usually no experience of living abroad. And that's, you know, living abroad is really one of the main challenges, understanding the culture and their own culture. Certainly, they're going to realize that not everybody does things the way they did it, whether in France or, you know, in their family or whatever it is. So it's a major change, and the people who accept to do that are usually risk takers who are, they want attention, they want something new, they want excitement. And once they arrive, everything feels so unsteady and unusual that they could very well attract to their own little cell. You know how patrons in general and the French are pretty good at that, staying together and sticking together and not necessarily all together. So I think that orientation, but also the social, more of a social work in a way, you know, with them, with them, to make sure that they actually friend outside the school, friend their age, and outside the school completely, which is not only hand.
Did you have something similar with yourself? Similar experience
when you first came over? When I first came to the U.S.,
Yeah.
I was very young. I didn't speak a word of English, because I took German and Spanish in school. So it was a very difficult experience. But I was, ran to a room with three American men, and you know, that's the reason I was speaking English today, because they were very strong. Some of them are still my friends and my children's godfather is actually. So it's a very long-lasting relationship with my family, my American family. But I was very grateful, and when I welcomed a new teacher coming from France, I asked them to please find, you know, in San Francisco, rent is so expensive, and you have to be roommate, especially young teachers, and I really encourage them to take an apartment with some American people so that they can get a little bit of the culture, a little bit of the language, and a little bit of understanding of how people do things around here. It is challenging. I have to say that it is very challenging. And I didn't realize at the time how generous my roommates were with their time and their patience. I can't believe they listened to my four sentences, you know, we read them for like 10 minutes and then you say something, but the conversation has moved on to something else, and then, what did she say? So stupid, you know. So I remember that very well, but that's, and that's something that I can probably help with. In my school right now, in this school in DC, we did have orientation days from the teachers where we talk about the cultural difference. If people don't want to say that, you know, there is a cultural difference. There's definitely a cultural difference between France and the U.S. Good, you know, should. And there are things to be learned, and I think that, you know, can't say what I can say. I think there are going to be a different out there on the other round. I think it takes a long time to get it across. So the problem of the here in gym on visa, which every school, every bilingual school has right now in the country, is, you know, it's quite critical. It's 3 years, you just have to get a friend to speak, and have a million get their hand out of the way.
Amy, how about your work with CPTE and accreditation teams? In fact, the work you would have to do in Louisiana with Compass, our assessment procedure. How
do
you go about evaluating your teachers, your staff, your school?
Okay, no, that's okay. Sorry, but you know, there are a lot of things, like Compass, I heard about that, but I don't know what it is, and there are a couple of other acronyms, questions that we don't know.
Yeah, no, I wrote that in
shorthand,
I'm sorry. I am a professor,
my
dad, I do a lot of assessment work as part of my job, so I saw your resume, CIS accreditation. I don't know what that is, but it sounds like something that would be potentially useful and would help you with the Compass system, which is a new Louisiana state mandated assessment process.
help you.
I've got an assistant I'm going to have to follow. It's going to be very helpful. It's helpful when it is, even if you can tweak it a little bit. CIS stands for the Council of International Schools. And it's a network of schools around the world. And the school I'm with right now is a member of that, and is a member also of many other networks, like the LFU and ASA, and a member of a variety of French bilingual network, but also of other schools. In my school is not only French, it's also international, meaning that we offer the IT program, the IT diploma, actually, not the program, but the diploma in the United States. Great, so some kids in our school don't speak a word of French. In high school, from pre-K to 12 to 8, everybody is in the bilingual program, which is mostly French, and based on the French curriculum. So that's why I'm very familiar with. We have our own in the school that we work with. We have people put together, or the schools put together prior to my arrival, assessment tools. We usually did with the student teachers. We're trying to move towards a more 360 kind of evaluation, where especially for the older students, the students have a say. And we are also very interested right now in the professional learning community, PLC, which is a way to grow, not exactly a way to assess people, but a way to grow them, a professional development. And professional development should be part of what is teacher needs to work for an assessment, I think it's only fair to assess teachers. They assess kids every day. They have no problem with that. They have no problem getting that grade, and they have no problem getting good grade. So, there it is. And I have no problem getting that grade either. I want to know where I'm going. No one can really know what he or she does until someone comes out of the river and says, yeah, this is what you do. You want that. So, you're pressing a little humble, but that's pretty good.
This was from Julie Venture, one of our teachers, regarding bus stops.
Can you hear
me? This was from Julie, one of our teachers.
Your teacher?
Which
one?
What is your opinion regarding the number of students per class and how it relates to the quality of education? Is a small class size a priority in your opinion? Considering students are doing the French language, what number of students per class would you expect to announce? Is 28 per class too many for third graders that are doing French?
No. I don't think so. I don't think 20 is too many.
28.
28? Okay. 20 is a little big at that age, but there's a lot of research, locally, showing that class size is very important and showing that class size is not very important. The one thing that every study shows is that the one thing is the teacher. So whether you teach 100 people or 20, it's about the person who's there and how he or she relates to the students and what is out there. That's what I've been experimenting in my life as a principal and a teacher, and that's what I've been reading in the various research. After that, there's research that says, you can always find numbers and study that says, more than 15, no way. And it's pretty big thing when you're, especially for independent schools where it looks like, you can do anything you want because you don't have to wait for people to open classes, for like an outside state decision to open classrooms. But the fact of the matter is sometimes small classes are not working well at all. I see classes of 15, but it's you know, it's not a classroom. It's like a birthday party, you know? And everybody's fun with everybody, which is good, but it's not something professional I'm not looking for. So I don't think that class size is the main issue. However, I would say that, you know, in lower grades, in a bilingual program, where students who don't master a language yet, yeah, there's probably a lot to be done on a one-on-one basis. But then differentiation is what makes a difference. What, you know, what is, and the tools, maybe we have better tools than we ever had. And the change and the revolution that's happening right now in the classroom are the answer to that.
So Charles Riley. Could you please give us your thoughts concerning teaching English to pre-K children at Lycée Français? There is some discussion regarding the cutting and reduction of English tuition to pre-K children at Alabama.
Maybe instruction. I don't know exactly what it looks like right now, how many minutes and hours of this and that is being had at any age. I don't think we have very good detail yet. But obviously, this is an American environment, and mastering the English language is going to be a priority. So it's, you know, this is a French school, but this is bilingual school, because the kids also speak another language anyway. Which is, by the way, the setting of pretty much any school in the world right now, because of the globalization and people. Moving along, I remember being a principal, a head of school in just outside Paris, and I had only 40 nationalities among families, and at least 20 different languages spoken at home. I had that also when I was in southern France, where, you know, it was the early 19s, and a lot of British people actually moved, it was the beginning of the internet and all that. A lot of British people decided that life was more enjoyable in southern France. I don't know. I have no idea. And they moved, and then suddenly they could work locally because of the internet and all that. So I have quite a few British families in an environment where I wasn't expecting any, frankly. So, how much of this and that should be taught? Oh, some accidents happened. Is that okay? But if you guys all know that the school after hours is the best place where kids could be, they love it. What's better with it as well, I think we just talked around here. Understand that. So how much are, how many minutes and hours of this and that? Until I look into the curriculum, you know, and then to the the daily routine of the school, what I can say about the high school right now, where we deal with most American kids too, and English speaking families, or other languages like French. In order to establish a French, we have pretty much 90% talking in French in order to establish the language and sort of balance out the environment and the family. So that's a lot. So that leaves small, and then by increment, we bring back English a little bit. So it's something that has to be very carefully assessed and see what's, you know, how the kids are doing on the programs and all that.
This one's from Darren Bells. Darren Bacca. How much experience do you have working with visas for teachers? Some of our teachers are at the end of their visas but would like to continue here. Of course, this will be an ongoing issue.
Yeah, well, my experience with them, I'm in charge of the assignment affairs of all the visas. I'm not doing visas. We have a human resource person, we have our own program. But both the Rochambeau in Washington, D.C., and French American, I think we tried to, you know, find it. Yes, it has become more difficult. It used to be possible to turn a J1 into an H1B, for instance. In my school, it's not possible anymore, and the State Department is very careful with that. J1 visas are meant to be exchange visas, and they're meant for people to exchange skills and learn new skills and bring in what they have from their own country. They're not meant for people to stay here. And I think we have to be very clear about that. Yes, some people want to stay. Well, there are a number of things that I would like to do. If it's not legal, it's not legal.
The local organization.
diversity is a foundation. So we have all kinds of diversity. We extend in, it's from ethnicity, religion, very differences, lifestyles, you know, how families, what kind of composition the family has, which is very important in San Francisco. Languages, so, you know, the mission of the school had four core values, and one of them is diversity. There's also social diversity, which is one pretty big financial requirement to make sure that our kids be in a world where everybody has a different background.
Michelle, please. How would you go about being sure the students in the school are meeting requirements for the first curriculum and later in the class?
Well, the back is a long-term project, obviously, but that's a main part. So you're right. This is a very important thing to do to make sure that our students are actually meeting their requirements and bringing, you know, a few, maybe bringing a few of the tests. I don't know whether this school uses the French test in second grade and at the end of fifth grade, but that would be probably the national test, I would think. And pretty much every school I know, every French American school, bilingual school I know in the US, we do that. Then there are, you know, it's a gradual thing to go into the back. And someone asked me today about the survey, which is the exam, the first exam, national exam, that all French kids take at the end of ninth grade. Ninth grade is the end of middle school in France, and then enter high school only starting 10th grade. So at the end of ninth grade, there is no exam that sort of sums up, you know, what other people have been learning, so writing, reading, and critical thinking abilities. As far as I know, all the schools are part of the network. The school that has been accredited by the French government reached that level of proficiency in their case. There's no problem, really. How do you make sure that learning happens anyway in the classroom? That is, you know, it's not only about tests, it's about every day. How do we assess that the teacher is effective and the students are learning? Well, that's, you know, I would say that it's one of the challenges. The implication is a long-term investment. And it's a little bit like health. Good education is something that you get, you know, it's difficult to define, but when you see it, you know what you're helping and you know what you're when you get your learning. So I would say it's pretty easy to see whether learning is happening in the classroom. How much for every child, that's where it becomes more difficult. Because that's what we want to build. We want to build skills, we want to know, and it's actually So as an artist, I've gone on, and it's a big, it's really about 80s different skills, whereas that, you know, every 6 weeks or so. So that's a lot, and it's pretty detailed. And it's also a very good way for the teacher to know which areas are trying to go into in a child. I think very strongly in differentiation in the classroom, and I think that's what's happening right now in education. And one of the things that more technology can help better with, making the learning more of an individual experience rather than, it's not a classroom anymore. The world is not like that anymore. It's much more individuals working together. It has to be collaborative, it has to be creative, it has to be differentiated.
This is my last first question, because everybody who's had a lot of questions at least one answer. You can have a thought maybe after you this week. But Maria, you can do a little bit, so we can start with the mingling portion of this. Is that all right? If anyone needs a question from here, let me know. We're going to have a so this was Jeff with the team. Can you speak to the experience with the operations side of writing school? For example, facility issues, resources, admissions, enrollment, contract review, plans.
Okay, well, I've done a lot of all that. Based on many different brands of employers are independent. Well, what can I say about it? Facilities, it looks like every school I go to, somebody starts a big building project or something, you know? It's like, and so like construction and working with architects and working with a contractor and the stage and all that, pretty much, I cannot even remember a school where I came to do it. Not even the school that I stayed only 1 year in. I actually enjoy that. I really love part of the facilities and creating the space for learning. That's, those things are actually changing a lot. And tables, chairs, all that, we really need that. And those are questions that you can ask when you think forward for new building and new classroom. But those are things that thinking about in my school right now. Contract and all that, so always best that I have a different resource for people, and it's but it is something that needs a lot of attention. A lot of attention to detail. There's no, especially in the beginning, I guess. But until the seniors and processes are really in place, and I really want to work with that, and requires a lot of attention, and it's a sediment for the rest of what's happening in the school daily. Job descriptions, also having to do with it. Having to hear job descriptions, making sure people understand what's expected from them. And so it's not about it. There's not one obvious job in the school, but really there's no obvious job anywhere. Everybody needs a job description. And when you do a teacher's evaluation or a senior evaluation, anybody's evaluation, it has to be done in regard with the job description. You do it or not. Was it well done, poorly done, or not done, or just fair, or etc. There are many ways to look at it. Now, but it's part of it. I mean, if you're not having a good job description, prepares for the evaluation. What about the other thing? Oh, yeah, food services. Yeah, well, I understand that there is a food service here, and everybody has it. It's probably a challenge. It's probably a challenge too. I had schools break for without that. I saw this morning that some kids were bringing their own lunch bag. I know some others were eating here. I don't know be discussed. I don't know how that works. Is it better to stay or not? Is it better that everyone stay or not? Are you guys and your children happy with the system here? And I understand that this is a very reasonable honorable firm that I'm talking to you. That's it. I'm very lucky. How long does that last? Those are very, those areas are around the school. Facilities and transportation and meal services are usually the most difficult. These are the core of our job. And, you know, it's a different job. So somebody that takes care of that, it's really difficult to have an outside firm and specialize to do that. It's pretty difficult.
So, please discuss.
policies and procedures.
You don't have to do every request.
I have to do every request, okay.
This is your opinion, to let us know what you want to let us know.
Then we should communicate the utilities and we will use it for to communicate clearly to those stakeholders. Communicating is very important, and it is the most important skill that we have to build in our children and to improve every day in our own lives. And clearly, in the tricky part, very often I feel, oh, I'm a good teacher, and I'm a teacher. When you're a teacher, you know that. So that's very clear. What was that clear? The other person didn't get it. So clearly, it's about perception. So the one other thing that I feel is that communicating too much is not always a better choice. Communicating clearly about main issues, not running the water and not everything around it. Yeah. Choosing in high school and middle school, I send a note every Friday night at 5, I send a note to the parents, every family receiving an email from me, saying what child we think is going to happen next week, and saying the day, for the following week. I try every time I'm bombarded by people in the school who say, all right, you put this in the note and that in the note. I have to say no, because if there are too many things, then there's no good reason. It has to be 4 or 5 items, and that's it. After that, people don't read it, people forget it, and it's not interesting. So it has to be very interesting. Starting to announce something 6 weeks in a row in advance, and then saying it again 6 times, people won't read it, that's what they forget. Oh, you said 6 weeks ago, you read it 6 times. I forgot. It becomes white noise or something. You don't pay attention. So choosing the opportunities to communicate and the objects of the communications are truly very important to make sure that it's still here and have priority. Not everything is a priority. So, all right, Charles. Could you please explain your position regarding art and music education in school? Super important. That's a good job. Okay, Charles. I think it's super important. Those are the things that we're going to enjoy when we're out of school. And I think we learn how to enjoy it in school. If so, congratulations, you're in a great school. If not, we should do more of that, because that's where the cultural and social divide really happens. And if you want to bring people together, I agree that arts and arts in general, not only visual arts, but theater, video, whatever the new things are today, music, those are things that are very important in the life of children, not only a lower school, all the way up. Yeah. Alright, this is a very long question from Mary Wanda. Wanda? In light of the very high energy skill that is hard to double that, and the fact that you do not have the advantage of being in a French environment, how does a school, I can say, bridge that gap to ensure our children do in fact achieve the appropriate level, high level of energy skill? Right, it's not only an energy skill. The skills that are needed for the 2000 level, which is a pretty tough exam, are many more than that. And I would say the main one is critical thinking. Because those kids are going to have to write essays in French in at least 5 topics. One of them being philosophy, that's for everybody. The other one being French literature, that's for everybody. History and geography, that's third. So sometimes a good language, so English, which is our first language here, and you have to write a literary essay in English too. And sometimes also economics, depending on what kind of. There are There are many schools, as you know, there are many French American schools in the United States and in North America. This is just one network of, I think it's now 55 schools altogether. And I've never heard, not everybody has goes all the way through that. Most of them, the majority of them, starts at the end of 8th grade. But the school that I've been with, French American and the school that I work with, in the Paul State and in San Francisco, and Oshawa in Washington, D.C., and the school in Houston, Ali in Houston, and Chicago, and Boston, none of them has ever had an issue with the level bringing the kids to the appropriate level to take the class. In fact, I believe that most of the schools and the three that I know, we have a 100% rate of success in the French background. The kids who are not French speakers by family or by heritage. So I wouldn't be worried about that, but right, you know, the curriculum is really well designed, and if we follow it and if we prepare our kids for that, why do we have to be schooling and have to be French schooling in America? Huh? No, I can think of a reason for that.
Chat. Okay, we don't, if anyone wants to leave, we're meeting's over, right? not how you're going to interact with your regular basis, although it may be something that happens. So, is that okay with everyone?
So, whatever happens next, I would like to thank you all for your commitment to this school and for coming here tonight and for reading all the bios and, you know, and participating in all these meetings. I think it's obviously a wonderful community.